97.5, The Fanatic.
As we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern, as we do each and every Saturday. And as I tell you each and every Saturday, come on down and hang out with us and get everything that you could possibly need done right here. You don't have to go anywhere else. To my left, you get all your bets in. You've got a ton of games today. You've got championship games today. You've got races. You've got PGA golf. You've got so much to get into this weekend, and you can get all your bets right to my left, and then of course go over to your right, get some food, get a drink, hang out. I promise you, you will not regret it. Come on down, we're here until 3 o'clock today. I'm Tyler Zulli as we broadcast live, as I said, from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. Producing today's show, you'll hear from him in a moment, is Mike Vito. He's back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. We will chat with Mike in just a moment. We have a ton to get into and a 3 hour run to do so, so let's jump right into things. As I left the studio yesterday, the Phillies were in the midst of a second game of a doubleheader in which they were, you know, back and forth with Washington, in which they had already won game one of the doubleheader. And as we would find out later, as the night progressed, they would win game two in dramatic fashion. Back and forth they went. Jose Alvarado had to hit. There was an error in the field that caused extra innings. This team never quits. They never give up. They never die. And because of that, this team found themselves winning three consecutive games in this series, and now 14 out of their last 16 for the first time in over a decade. So we started yesterday's show with a similar conversation that we're going to begin today's show. But I think it's an imperative conversation to have because of the way that the building blocks are structured with this Phillies team. Because of the way that this team has blossomed over the last 2.5 weeks, over the last 3 weeks, and specifically because of the way that this team has grown since the removal of Joe Girardi as the team's manager. And if you listen to the show last night, you're going to say, Tyler, this is a lot of the same talking points that you had last night. But it is imperative to understand why we're doing this again today. Matt Gelb wrote a really good piece this early this morning on The Athletic and described this never-say-die attitude, this almost like Goonies style of play, if you will. And if you're not familiar with the movie The Goonies, like, right, Goonies never die, right? That's kind of their thing. They never say die. They go on adventures. They find ways out of situations. The Phillies have adapted that, like, 1980s cheesy movie mentality of never say quit, never say die, down to their final strike against the Washington Nationals the other day. And an unlikeliest of heroes in Garrett Stubbs wins the game on a walk-off home run. Down to their final strike against the LA Angels twice a couple of weeks ago. Well, not their final strike, but their final strike of the inning. Bryce Harper comes up huge, and then Bryson Stott wins the game for them. Down to the final inning against the Milwaukee Brewers, against the best closer in baseball, the best relief pitcher in the entirety of the game, a guy that up to that point had not given up a run in the regular season since July of last year in Josh Hader. And home runs from Vierling ties the game. And I believe it was Stott or Bohm. One of the two. Regardless, this team continues. It was Bohm. Thank you, Mike. This team continues to find a way to persevere and finds a way to rip victories out of the jaws of defeat and win despite the fact that the deficiencies that they've performed with, or that we expected them to perform with, are, you know, beginning to start to reel their ugly heads a little bit. And that's an expectation. Defensive ineptitude. You saw last night, I'm faster than Nelson Cruz at this point. and I got a bum knee. But I promise you I'm faster than 41-year-old Nelson Cruz. And Didi Gregorius doesn't take his time on a ground ball. Throws it over the head of Rhys Hoskins. Rhys Hoskins, on the flip side, doesn't come off the bag and make the play, and a run scores because the ball caroms into an out-of-play position. Forces extra innings. The following inning, they tack on multiple runs. JT comes up big in a spot that was desperately needed for him. And Jose Alvarado shuts the door out of the bullpen in inning number two after what should have been a clean inning in inning number one for him. This team has defied itself, and maybe not defied itself. Maybe that's not the right phrase to use, because these are kind of the expectations that we had for this team. They were going to be a bad defensive team. They were going to strike out a lot. Who knew what the bullpen was going to look like? But the expectations, positively for this team, was that they were going to hit the cover off the baseball. They were going to hit a lot of home runs. They were going to have multiple guys who you could count on in RBI spots, in RBI situations, to come through when needed. This team won two consecutive games over the span of 7 hours of baseball yesterday, despite the fact that they struck out three consecutive times with the bases loaded in game one, despite the fact that they had a critical error down the stretch in game two, despite the fact that they had to throw multiple innings of Bailey Falter and Nick Nelson in game two because of the fact that they taxed their bullpen and had a doubleheader scheduled, and they had to bring up a guy to pitch game two because they didn't want to mess with the rotational the movement of the rotation. This team continues to find ways to win. And that's why when I look at this team and I watch what this team has done, I had this conversation with Tyrone and Jen a week ago. And I said, stay grounded, enjoy it, but don't take it over the top. If they start to falter, don't take that over the top. When Tyrone and Jen said this was 100% Joe Girardi's fault. And while I'm still not there, it is so evidently clear, that Joe Girardi was a critical cog in the lack of success that this team faced. Not just in roster construction, because that's not on him. Not just in lineup construction, because they were looking for a spark when the team started to falter. Not just in bullpen decisions. While that is squarely on him, he's not the one out there throwing pitches, right? He's not Corey Knebel out in the closer role. He's not Jose Alvarado. He's not James Norwood or Nick Nelson. But he was the one that was making the decisions. Most importantly, the intangible thing about this is that Joe Girardi was clearly in some capacity mentally holding this team back. Now, I don't know if it was an internal locker room thing. I don't know if it was a conflict of interest between a manager who just didn't connect with his players and players who didn't connect with their manager. I don't know if it was a team that had started to have deficiencies and they snowballed and Joe Girardi was unable to step out of that way and pull them to the side, and they just kept running downhill while the larger and larger and larger snowball began to roll faster and faster and faster down the hill. I don't know what exactly went on in that locker room, what went on in that clubhouse, and what went on with that team. And quite frankly, I don't think we're ever going to know, because that's internalization of things that happen with an organization. But I do know for a fact that this team is walking lighter. This team is above the clouds now. They seemingly have gotten past their rut. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be another rut somewhere down the line. Those things happen over the course of a 162-game schedule. They're going to lose a series. They're going to lose two series. They might lose three in a row. It might happen. But I know that this organization now, under the leadership of Rob Thompson, both intangibly and tangibly, because I think the intangible plays into the tangible, have improved drastically in the last 3 weeks. So with that being said, I understand there's still 90 games left to be played. I understand that they've not hit their negative wall just yet. But clearly, this team has responded to a managerial change. I do not know if it's a positive response to a negative manager or a positive response to a new manager. And I think that that is going to be determined when decisions don't go their way. They've made some, Rob Thompson's made a couple of critical errors, I think. For the most part, he has survived them, and this team has survived them. Pulling Kyle Gibson the other day, was it Kyle Gibson or was it Zach Eflin? Pulling Zach Eflin the other day was a critical error on his part. Probably cost them the game. But some of the decisions that he made have not backfired on them yet. I'll see what happens with the fortitude of this team when a decision that he makes a couple in a row backfire on this team. But with all of that being said, with the understanding that this team has clearly connected with his manager and connected with each other on a level that was unseen with Joe Girardi as the manager at the beginning of the season and last year for a majority of the season, I know it's early. I know 14 out of 16 is not like this world-class sample size. But is it time to start talking about the removal of the interim tag? I don't usually jump to conclusions. And that doesn't even necessarily mean that you externalize the removal of the interim tag and make it known to us and to the fans and to the reporters. I'm not saying that you have to do it publicly. But it could be an internal thing where you say, listen, this is not for public consumption. Right, companies do that all the time. We get emails that say, don't send out this information yet. Or I'm sure you at your job get an internalized email that says, this is what our company-wide plan is, or this is what our budget looks like, or this is what our future entails. Don't put it out to the public yet. Happens all the time in companies. I think making that declaration internally would push this team even further. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. And that is where we begin today's show. I am usually not one to jump to conclusions. I am usually not one to say after 2-3 weeks of baseball specifically that a decision has been made or my mind is made up. But quite frankly, my mind's made up in this situation. Whether you externalize it or not and you make it public information, I would internally be removing the interim tag from Rob Thompson's name. 610-632-0975. That's where we begin today's show. And that is where we welcome our second member of the program to today's show. That, of course, would be our producer back at our Balakinwood studios, Mike Vito. First and foremost, Mike, good afternoon. Happy Saturday. Hope you are well. And your thoughts on the removal of the interim tag.
Good afternoon, Tyler, to you as well. I think had the way you just categorized that is you do keep it internally. You don't have to put it out to everybody because then everybody's going to want to opinionize it and everything else. But he has brought a calming factor almost to this team and allowing them to play to their strengths. And it feels like he just has a better pulse on what's going on with the team and has instilled a confidence in this team that no matter what the situation is, they're never out of it. And that, when you're on top of the world, I don't want to say you're on top of the world, but when you're in a spot where you're confident and it doesn't matter what the situation presents itself, that you feel like you're never out of it and you can win and you can come back is insurmountable. And I think it just gives you a different mindset in how you approach things. One part I will semi-disagree with, depending reading after the game, at the time when he pulled Eflin in that start against the Marlins, you're questioning why, because he got touched up early, sure, and then went into cruise control, yes, and looked like the pitcher you normally see at home.
Threw five really strong innings after that first.
They couldn't touch him. I think the last three were 1-2-3 innings. He was just cruising at that point. So why would you take him out? But from reading the stuff after the game, hey, I talked to him. His knee was bothering him. It was the one that was surgically repaired late last year and into the offseason. So I don't want to say it was a his decision backfired there, but obviously in the moment, it's like, oh man, what are you doing? Why would you pull that and put the worst part of your team into the game at that point is you're unsure of the bullpen. But just how he talks to the players, Joe may have put him back out there not knowing he's hurt, and then now you got a further problem down the line.
Understood.
But I just feel like the way Rob's handling these guys. He's talking to the guys. He's not just running into his office and closing the door and just doing what he's doing. He's out there. He's talking to these guys. He's understanding what they're thinking, what they're feeling. And I think that's instilled a confidence that, and you said, what, over the last 2 weeks now, you're 14-2 in these last 16 games. And he's just putting these guys in the right spot. And it's just a matter of way you're managing this, where Joe just, I think he was too caught up in the numbers sometimes. And I was looking at one of the things, while Joe was still here, the one game we brought up last week was the Phillies lost to the Braves down in Atlanta. Harper hits that home run in the ninth inning that put them up 5-4. And then you bring in Nick Nelson, and he gives up the lead and essentially the loss in the ninth inning. They lose 6-5.
Yes.
But I looked at the two prior games. Guess who pitched in both of those games? Corey Knebel. And it's the thing. Oh, I'm not pitching these guys on a third day, but then he decides he does it with Yuri's Familia. If you put Corey Knebel out there, not saying it's going to result in a save, and he's pitching on his third day, maybe he does get touched up. But you're choosing Nick Nelson over Corey Knebel in that situation. Why? Like, what's the proven thing? And here's the other thing I looked at as well. Sir Anthony Dominguez didn't pitch the day before. Why aren't you pitching Sir Anthony in a save situation at that
point? Great question. It is incredibly difficult as a manager, as a front office member, as maybe a leader of a clubhouse, right? Like, we think about Bryce Harper's probably the leader of the clubhouse, and there's multiple different ways to go about leadership, right? It could be the vocal leader, like Jimmy Rollins was. It could be the intangible on the field, like do as I do type leader, like Chase Utley was. There's multiple different ways to go about being a leader. But regardless of if you're the vocal guy, if you're the on-the-field guy, if you're the behind-the-scenes guy, installation of not just confidence, but courage into a team. And I say courage, and I don't mean like, you know, running into battle and, you know, having insurmountable numbers, right? This isn't like, you know, medieval England that we're trying to talk about, right? But courage meaning more along the lines of having that understanding that this is not over. Having no fear going into the ninth inning against Josh Hader. Going into the eighth inning against Grant Williams. Going into a situation against Tanner Scott where you know you're going to see a bevy of sliders because he throws, what, like 72% breaking ball from the left-hand side, and being a left-handed hitter and knowing that you just need to get that one pitch that he leaves over the plate and you're going to make him pay for it. The installation of that confidence and courage is really, really hard to do. And it takes time. So the fact that this has gelled so quickly and come together so quickly is not just a testament to Rob Thompson, but it's a detriment to Joe Girardi and whatever was going on in that locker room and in the clubhouse and in his office. Because like you said, Mike, it seems very apparent, right? Nick Castellanos said he spoke to him, what, twice since he's been here? It's very, very apparent that Joe Girardi did not have a connection with this team.
No, absolutely. And that's a huge part of this. It's a different manager in baseball compared to the other sports. And we've talked about this before. They have more of a hand. They're not going to win you all the games, obviously, and they're going to lose you more. But they have a hand more than any other sport in a sense. This is an everyday sport. You're out there grinding every day for 6 months. And Castellanos says that. That's, what, two months into the season, and you've talked to your manager twice?
Twice.
Where do you build any continuity or anything? Like, an understanding of what's expectation in this and different spots? Like, that should be... It doesn't have to be every day, but at least every other day, even if it's just a small conversation for 15 minutes, just to get an understanding and just feel comfortable in different spots. And, hey, we're going to try to do this, or let's do this in a situation with a guy on second. But just a little, and it's little stuff. It has to be egregious and major. It's little stuff. And I think it just kind of piled up. And what you said and how quickly it came together. And was it more of what Thompson done or detriment to Joe? And it's a combination of both.
But it just shows yes?
How close they really were. And it just, you needed one thing to change. And now you look at where they're at.
610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. That is where we begin today's show. I'm ready to do it. I know that it's a little bit maybe harsh, extreme even. Just 16 games after we were talking about you know, the potential of what would this team do if they've got to tear things down and rebuild? What would this fan base do? I understand that there's a lot of baseball left to be played. I am also understanding that things can change in the blink of an eye. But right now, I am ready to make that decision, at least internally with this team, to remove that interim tag from Rob Thompson's name. 610-632-0975, again, is the number to join the conversation. On the other side, we have a lot to get into. By the way, at 1:10 today, just after 1 o'clock, we are going to speak to Jason Martinez to get a little bit of a further breakdown on the hiring of the Flyers' new head coach, John Tortorella, a four-year deal worth somewhere in the ballpark of approximately $4 million per season for Tortorella. I want to dive into two particular hot-button talking points with Tortorella that I know Jason has dispelled a little bit. We want to dive in a little bit deeper because there's nobody that I know that knows more about this game than Jason that I like to talk to on a frequent basis. So we'll check in with him at 1:10 to discuss the hiring of Tortorella and the process in which it took the Flyers quite some time to get to this decision. We'll do all of that and more in the 1 o'clock hour. Also, we got a couple of fun side topics to open up. And next segment, I want to talk about the word closer. You know, Tyrone and Hunter do their word of the day on Saturdays. Tyrone does it every time, every day during the afternoon show. But I want to talk about the word closer and what it means to sports. And I don't just mean closer in the capacity of Corey Knebel versus Sir Anthony Dominguez. I don't mean it in just a baseball sense. But I want to expand upon it to all five Philadelphia sports teams and talk about the word closer. Talk more about the Union's return as well. We'll get into everything as we're just getting started here on 97.5 The Fanatic as we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here in Malvern inside Chickie and Pete's. Come on down and say hello. We are here until 3. Mike Vito producing today's show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We do take you until 3 right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
One o'clock hour here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zulli and Mike Vito as we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. We are here until 3. In about 10 minutes or so, maybe a little bit less, we'll speak to Jason Martinez to break down all of the latest with the Flyers, including and almost exclusively related to the hiring of John Tortorella as the team's new head coach. We'll do that in about 10 minutes' time. But before we get to that, speaking of the Flyers, this team is not, or this city, let me rephrase that, is not new to, let's put this kindly, odd mascots. I think that's putting it nicely. You guys know how I feel about Gritty. It's an unpopular opinion, but you know how I feel about Gritty. So, mascots at this point are not a shock to me when they get announced, except for whatever this monstrosity is that Hasbro just introduced. Mike, did you see this thing?
I did not. Did you say Hasbro?
Hasbro. The children's toy company?
Okay, yes.
So Hasbro, as you may or may not know, is the, I guess, parent company of the Nerf products. Everybody had a Nerf football, right? Or Nerf basketball, mini nets or whatever it is, right? You had some kind of Nerf product, right?
Absolutely, quite a few.
Nerf introduced this mascot 20-some hours ago, and his name is Murph. So I guess he's Murph Nerf. First of all, it's terrible. You got to come up with something better than that. Second of all,
I'm already thinking of Smurf for him.
His catchphrase is, quote, unleash the play in you. Now, I get it. Nerf is about, like, active sports and, you know, having fun, being active, all that good stuff. Mike, if you can look this thing up, all you got to do is Twitter search Nerf, N-E-R-F, right? You know the company. This thing is a monstrosity. I mean, it is terrifying. It looks like if you took like 850,000 Nerf footballs and cut them into like thin carrot-like strips, and then you just glued them on to somebody, this is what you'd come up with. This thing is an abomination. You guys know that I'm not a gritty guy, but this thing makes gritty look good. This thing is an absolute abomination. So if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out.
I just pulled it up, Tyler. That's horrendous.
Horrible, isn't it?
Oh my.
Not just from like a that's a scary looking mascot standpoint, because it is. It's definitely a scary looking mascot. But it looks like somebody came into the board meeting and it was mascot decision day, and whoever's responsibility it was to come up with an idea had no ideas. And they're like, What if we stripped down a whole bunch of Nerf footballs and plastered them onto a mascot outline? And the head of Nerf was like, that's brilliant. Make it happen. That thing is terrifying.
Does it even have a face?
I don't think it has a face.
I don't see eyes.
I don't think it has eyes or a mouth or no. Like, even as creepy as Gritty is, at least he has facial structure and facial features. This thing is just all Nerf all the time. And it's got like Nerf skate shoes. This thing is terrifying.
Yeah, I'm not showing my... Well, not that I have kids, but I'm definitely not showing my kids. Wouldn't be showing my kids that anytime soon.
Have you ever seen the Pierre the Pelican's mascot before they, like, tamed him down?
Yeah.
He was creepy.
Yeah, that was a little...
This guy's up there for different reasons. That pelican was like I'm under your bed nightmare fuel, right? Like, I am the monster that lies in your under your bed type deal.
Yeah.
But this guy's pretty creepy, too.
Yeah, this one might top that list for sure. And I'll tell you what, back to the Gritty for a split second, I wasn't a fan of Gritty initially. I was like, what good God is that? But now that he's grown on me a little bit, I've come to love Gritty. I know not everybody's a fan of him. Obviously, everybody's going to take the Fanatic before Gritty, but... At times, I would take Gritty before the Fanatic, which is crazy, I know.
And if you remember, too, Mike, I don't know if you've ever heard me say this, I am out on all mascots. I know they're not for me, right? They're for kids, they're for entertainment purposes. I understand that they are not for me, because I'm going to watch the game no matter what. That's what I'm there for. When I go to a game, I'm there to watch the game. So I understand that mascots are not for me. But, with that being said... I am not a mascot guy at all. But there are some good ones. This Nerf one is not one of them. 610-632-0975. All right, we're going to speak to Jason Martinez in just one moment. But something that Matt from Northeast Philly brought up to us before the break that I want to get to was pertinent to this conversation. If you've heard me before, you know that I am not a fan often of retread hires. And what I mean by retread hires are coaches that have been around multiple teams and multiple times. So, for example, when the Phillies hired Gabe Kapler, I was all for it because I was adamantly against the hiring of Joe Girardi that time around. He had been with the Marlins. He had been with the Yankees. I wanted a fresh voice, a fresh mindset, and a new idea. So oftentimes, I am not a proponent of retread hires. And that often trickles down to almost every team's, you know, every conversation about a team that's looking to hire a new coach. The second time for the Phillies, I thought they should have hired Joe Girardi, which they did, because of the fact that you needed to swing the pendulum back to a head coach that was more in tune with the gut feel stuff. Now, granted, we ended up not getting that with Binder Joe, but that was the thought process. Would he be? He would be a little bit more gut feel compared to what Gabe Kapler was. But for the most part, I am somebody that if you're going to go new, especially if you're in a position where your team is not that good, I'm a big believer in hiring a newer, a younger, a fresher head coach. In this particular instance with the Flyers, I have to be a little bit hypocritical amongst myself because I think that John Tortorella was the right hire. To put it mildly, I said this last night, this team needs an infusion of, like, accountability, to put it mildly. They need an infusion of accountability. And if there's one thing that we know that Tortorella is known for, it's giving accountability to his players, holding himself accountable, holding his players accountable, and he's not afraid to call them out when things happen. I think this team needs that. And we're going to dive even deeper into that right now with our guest, of course, on the Comcast Business Hotline. You can hear him all over the place. Flyers Daily, of course, great podcast. You can hear him on the Flyers pre, intermission, and postgame show on 97.5 The Fanatic and on our sister station 93.3 WMMR with the Flyers Broadcast Network. That, of course, is Jason Mertidis as he joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline today. First and foremost, Jason, thanks so much for taking part of your Saturday to talk to us for a couple minutes.
No problem. Anytime.
So one of the things, and I guess we'll jump right into it with John Tortorella, one of the big things that I know that you have been fighting, that I am in agreement with you, but if you don't mind expounding a little bit further, is the argument of Tortorella having that kind of massively burning bright star, and then it fizzles out. And the reality of the situation is there are only three coaches in the NHL right now, head coaches, that were hired prior to the calendar year of 2018, which means coaching turnover happens all the time. So why does John Tortorella kind of get put into that mold of, like, you know, he's going to come in, it'll be hot, and then things are going to die off very quickly?
Well, he gets put into that because the perception of him in the media and what people have seen from the outside is that he's an incredibly combative guy that does burn hot and that is very hard on players and drives players very hard. And the assumption when you have a coach like that is that he burns out quick and he comes in and hits everybody hard but flames out very quickly. But that the reality of the situation and the reality of John Tortorella is not that. The average tenure of an NHL coach is 2.4 years.
Sure.
That's over the past 20 years. John Tortorella's average length of tenure, if you take out the 1 year in Vancouver, is 5.2 years. And if you keep the 1 year, the one-and-done year he had in Vancouver, it's 4.4 years for average tenure. He's had a six-year stint in Columbus. He had a five-year stint with the New York Rangers, and he had a six-year stint with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, far longer than the average 2.4 years. And now, why is that? Why is the perception so wildly wrong with the reality? It's because, you know, he's a guy that's very harsh with the media. So the narrative is that his players hate playing for him. And again, the reality doesn't match, or the perception doesn't match the reality. Not every player loves playing for him. Not every player is going to love playing for any coach. But the majority of his players do like playing for him, even though there are combative periods when you do play for him. So that's the thing that you're trying to kind of balance, is the reality versus the perception when it comes to John Tortorella. And he also is a guy that has evolved and has changed.
One thing that I noticed with his press conference yesterday is multiple times he made note that he is not critiquing past failures or transgressions that this organization has come under the last couple of years, right? Whether it be direction or the progression of young talent or getting the most out of their, you know, star players or their veteran players. So I want to ask you, of the things that you heard from Tortorella's press conference yesterday and of the things that you know of him as a head coach, what are your expectations in, I don't want to call it a turnaround, or and he didn't really want to use the term rebuild or retool or whatever it may be, but what are your expectations for a veteran coach who's been around a couple of times, who is dealing with an organization that is not at a point of strength right now?
Yeah, I mean, that really depends on what they accomplish this offseason. You know, I'm still seeing reports from credible reporters, Darren Dreger and Elliot Freeman, that the Flyers are going to be incredibly aggressive this offseason. But I don't know, aggression's one thing, but what you can accomplish and reality may be another. Because in sports, you can't control the other general managers. You can say you want to do a lot, but if there's not a lot there to be done, you're kind of beholden to the people that, you know, that you're trying to do business with. So it all depends on what they accomplish. They do have talent on this roster. This notion that they don't have any talent, I want to remind people that Sean Couturier is coming back. He did win the Selke 2 years ago. He is a 75-point-per-82-game player. So there is talent there, and there's talent beyond him. So what pieces he has to deploy remains to be seen. So if he has pieces, they'll have more success. If they go in as currently constructed and deal with injuries again, then he won't have huge success, or there won't be a massive turnaround. But there will be a big turnaround in culture, in the standard, and those things that he can control right now. And he said, you know, going into camp, it's going to be a hard camp. They're going to skate a lot. There's, you know, it's not going to be easy, and there's going to be guys that at points are going to want to gouge his eyeballs out because of the way he drives them. But eventually, you know, Torts is a guy that will get the most out of every player and ratchet up their game to a level they didn't think they could get to.
So when you talk about that offseason and you talk about that training camp, right, obviously the catchphrases come up, right, the bag skate and the land runs, just like having extensive amount of even off the ice stuff where it's just like, this is cardio, this is conditioning, I'm going to get you into that best shape possible. As you made mention, sometimes it can become, you know, combative, and at the end it's the hope to get the most out of each and every player. My thought when it comes to that is going to what youth that this team has, right? And I know that this is another thing that you have been very adamant about when it comes to Tortorella, because people have described him as like a youth destroyer or whatever that may be. But you made mention on Twitter about Vinny LeCavalier and Martin St. Louis, and we've seen guys, you know, in Columbus and have really, really successful careers take that next step under Tortorella. So what should we expect from the youth of this team under Tortorella?
Yeah, it seems like one of those boxes in sports is veteran coach means they hate young players and they prefer veteran players, right? And with Tortorella, he is a guy that has developed and given a lot of responsibility to young players at every stop in his career. Just whether it's Besser in Vancouver or whether that's going all the way back with Vinny LeCavalier, who got at 19 years of age, Martin LeWitt, many, many other players throughout his career that he's developed as younger players. I think the biggest key, and where you can see a big jump too, is not only just the development of players, young players like Morgan Frost, Owen Tippett, Jackson.
Oh, did we lose Jason?
Those guys had a really good development to a certain point, but obviously over the last couple of years, the development has stalled, regressed, whatever you want to call it. Some of the players may disagree with that. That's just off it. You know, the trajectory going back in the right direction. And if you can do that with a guy like Ivan Provorov, I think he's a player that he would love, because he likes to deploy a number one defenseman 25, 26 plus minutes a game. You know that Provorov can do that. So, you know, again, part of that's going to depend on his partner.
So one last question for you, and of course we are joined by Jason Martinez on the Comcast Business Hotline. And Jason, thanks so much for taking a part of your Saturday to join us here this afternoon. One last question for you. When it comes to tangible results. Obviously, you know Philadelphia. They're, of course, the most mild-mannered fan base in the world. Obviously, right? When it comes to Philadelphia, tangible results are an important, important factor to keeping a coach, keeping a quarterback, keeping a goaltender, whatever the case may be. In terms of year one, as you made mention, they seem to be like they're going to be aggressive in the offseason. They get Ryan Ellis back. They're going to get a full year of Kevin Hayes, full year of Sean Couturier. What are realistic expectations for tangible results in year one under John Tortorella?
Again, I think it's an impossible question to answer because I don't know what the roster is going to look like yet.
Sure.
I don't know the health of Ryan Ellis. I talked to Chuck Fletcher yesterday after his press conference and asked for an update on Ryan Ellis, and everything, according to rehab for this summer, is on target. A target? No. Is it a target? No. But what does that mean? And, you know, he's such a man, and they don't find a suitable replacement, then it is not a hell. It's better. But how much better? And that depends on what they had this summer. Depends on a lot of factors that we don't know the answer to yet. And frankly, like with the Ryan Ellis, you know, he's the biggest question mark to me this offseason.
Sure.
We don't know the full answer to that question until this time next year, because it just has to take place. An entire season has to take place. We can go into the season and go, yeah, he feels great, blah, blah, blah. He felt great last year. He played four games, mm-hmm. You know? So seeing is believing when you're dealing with a player that's dealt with injury.
Jason, can't thank you enough for taking some time with us today. Obviously filling us in on some of the intangibles, the tangibles of what a John Tortorella-led hockey team is going to look like this summer, what it might look like in the beginning of October when this team gets back on the ice. Can't thank you enough for taking some time for joining us today.
Here's one thing I know.
Yes.
It'll be entertaining.
For sure. It won't be for lack of conversation. That like last year, I felt that there was a dip in care, and I know that's maybe a little bit harsh, but that's kind of how it felt amongst the fan base. I don't think that that's going to be the case this year.
Yeah, there was a malaise last year. There won't be a malaise with him around.
Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking some part of your Saturday. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Cool. Thanks, Tyler.
That's Jason Martinez on the Comcast Business Hotline joining us today, giving us all the latest on the John Tortorella news and his thoughts on what this team could look like next year, what this team is going to look like in the offseason in training camp, and what this team might look like under its brand new head coach. And as I made mention, we'll talk more about it on the other side. Mike and I will give our opinions. I gave mine, but I am not a retread, rehire type of guy usually. I think in this particular instance, it was the right move for the Flyers because let's be honest with ourselves. I think we all knew, or at least we all felt like, the individual singular name that the Flyers were targeting was Barry Trotz. He made it very, very clear that he had no interest. So they turned their attention to Tortorella. I think that this is the hire that was the right one for the situation. Mike and I will talk more about it on the other side. We'll continue the conversation with the Phillies. The games that you played as a kid, when you got your group of friends together, what was that summertime game that you played? For me and Mike, we had different names, but it was a similar game. Freedom, capture, whatever you called it. We'll talk more about that. Get into the union conversation as well, as they are back on the pitch today taking on FC Cincinnati. And we'll talk about the World Cup as well coming to Philadelphia in 2026. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. Mike Vito back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. I'm Tyler Zulli as we take you until 3, broadcasting live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.